On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, a minute past the hour as we move toward the end of this, second full week of August. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, your home for this little endeavor we like to call conversation radio, which you yourself create and which you yourself perpetuate. I'm pretty impressed with you, I gotta say, and that's no sarcasm. Citizen-made media is about the only hope we have left in terms of avoiding the sort of corporatized plutocratic garbage spew that we face on any given day. And it, you know, what we do here comes in at about less than 5 cents an hour. If you look at it, we ran the numbers a long time back. Well, somebody did. I can't be trusted to run numbers. I can't be. Well, there are a lot of things that I'm competent to. I'm not allowed a calculator. Let's put it that way. I can hurt myself. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where you go to get the live stream, or you can also go and pick up the stream links at the subdomain. For this program at WhiteRoseSociety.org, you will also find the podcast feed address there. You can get the podcast over at iTunes, too, if you want to. On your smart or tablet devices, you can take The Horn with you wherever you go, be it podcast or live or the 24/7 rerun stream. You can take it with you wherever you go with handy little apps like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Internet Radio, your choice. My obvious preference is TuneIn, because it just is. I'm awfully happy to say that we start this evening below our evening's regular fundraising goal. Let's get this out of the way, because I hate this. I hate it. 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 But it's not. But it's how we keep this going. But thanks to Cindy and thanks to Joan, who took care of some stuff earlier in the day and helped out. No kidding. We don't have to meet the hundred. It's not $150 to be met in these three little hours. No, thanks to those two individuals, and sincerely thank you. We only have to make up a relatively short span of $85, which I would hope we can take care of in pretty short order. Thank you again to Cindy and to John. Now, where to begin this evening? It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we have to bear that in mind. So we're looking for things that, that make us a little squirmy. But the other side of that coin is that I don't set things up this way. The universe is out there, the stories happen, and the show builds itself. I said show, didn't I? The program builds itself around that. And it's, well, it's rather surprising sometimes the way things work out. I can tell you, for instance, that if we were to want to, you remember who we talked about last night? Disgraced former Navy chaplain Gordon Chappie, you know, the furry chappies that make you look like you're goat-legged. Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt. We got another one. I don't know if I've got the stomach to go through it or not, but we've got another one. And we got some history stupid and some actually good news out of the legal world. So it doesn't qualify quite as a thorn in our sides, but, well, what caused the legal action certainly was a thorn. Toward, later last night, as things were winding down, got a note in from Steve. Spying program satanic. Remember, that's what disgraced former Navy chaplain Gordon Chappie, goat-legged Chappie, ooh, Klingenschmidt said the spying program was satanic. Why is every effing thing these F-pies disagree with have to have its roots as satanic? Who is this John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt anyway? He had a certain impact. Chappie Gordon, I guess we'll just call him Goat Leg for short, right? Yeah. For any of you who actually spent part of your precious existence watching the unutterably bad Dan Aykroyd, Tom Hanks vehicle, Dragnet, some many, many years back, you'll remember it centered around a plot of Satanists bent on taking over Los Angeles, and when they went to their rallies, they wore their little goat leg chaps, and that's where my mental image comes from. But, well, give a fundy a Bible, and he'll lecture you all day. Give a fundy a webcam, and he will lecture you for the rest of your days. Yeah. And then this, from Dr. John, who has been rather busy of late. He's been in the midst of a move. I don't think there's any... And you know, you, like I had a buddy once who said, more than one move in 5 years is like having a house fire. Because just it's lost. So Dr. John's been in the midst of a move and probably getting ready for another one. And nonetheless, gets through the podcast. And sometimes I wonder how I get from one night to the next. And y'all, how do you do it? But bless your heart that you do. Dr. John says, "Hey, Bob, I caught up with Tuesday's program where I learned about the usurpation of parental control that California has approved in refusing to police children's gender choices. I have a bit of an issue with describing this issue as choice, and I wanted to explain and throw out a concept that might be useful going forward. And I think it is useful, else I wouldn't be sharing this. Because this is about 900 bajillion trillion times more intelligent than my response was to the whole Fox scumgudgeon. See, I have to reach out there for words like scumgudgeon, which probably isn't a word. And I was left pretty much sputtering the whole time anyway. No, I think this explains things very, very well. Regarding gender choice, Dr. John says, I suggest that making a choice is not really what happens regarding gender. Choice implies that we're all completely free and unencumbered by history and society. And when I read that sentence, I was immediately reminded of the closing line of one of my favorite novels, which is Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men. in which the protagonist, sort of, he's more the narrator than the protagonist. The protagonist is Willie. But the narrator, who is Jack Burden, refers in the final line of the book to going off into the awful responsibility of history. And that line has always had some sort of resonance with me. And so when Dr. John wrote, "Choice implies that we're all completely free and unencumbered by history and society," I, bing! Because, you know, we are. History's over, the future is coming, and the present never happens. The present is that one of those mathematical concepts that was invented by people who ought not, like me, have been fooling with mathematics. Choice implies that we're all completely free and unencumbered by history and society. Hang on to that. And naturally, Dr. John continues and said, "Choice is a concept with nasty Reaganist and neoliberal overtones." And I think there's probably even more than that, Dr. John. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it's even further, because, and when I see things like freedom of choice, I remember being curious when I was just a little baby hillbilly going to school in a public school system down in Alabamistan. Every year, they would hand these forms out to us as students, and we would take them home, and we would be told, "Now, make sure your mama and daddy get this form, and fill it out, and make sure y'all bring it back, because this is super important." And it was a freedom of choice form, in which one could theoretically freely choose to go to whichever school one desired in the city school system. It wasn't until years later I found out that this had to do with desegregation and integration. Hiding under the rubric of freedom of choice. Oddly enough, many of the children of color had been freely chosen to go to a particular school, and some, the rest, had been parsed out into the little white schools. Some schools were more freely of color than others, you see. So, yeah, I get it when Dr. John says choice is a concept with nasty Reaganist and neoliberal overtones. "It conjures up," he says, "an image of society being like a giant supermarket, and we're all just free-acting consumers playfully filling our identity shopping carts with whatever strikes our fancy. Okay, today I'll choose a carton of male gender and a case of middle-class values." What a perfect image for bringing this whole notion to light. Because I think we know that that's utter BS, but it's hard to say that it's BS until we have a concrete means of pointing out why and how. Dr. John says, "People in the social sciences who use this concept, also called agency, the agency concept, tend to be somewhat conservative or at least dismissive of the very real constraints that culture and history impose on people's actions." Culture and history. We don't, really. It's almost, we almost treat it like we do the autonomic nervous system, don't we? How hard is it to explain to a Southern Baptist from Arab, Alabama, Stan, that a child born in Saudi Arabia has no more choice to become a Southern Baptist than the person in Arab, Alabamistan had of being a Muslim or Hindu? But it's like beating your head against a brick wall trying to explain that until you have something concrete to build with. Brick walls, concrete, And history. If you come from a societal segment that has been, or a subgroup of a culture that has been forever oppressed, it's going to be hard to sit down and identify with your oppressors once you become aware of the oppression. Right wing complains then, well, they're just trying to divide America when we're all just Americans. We had that the other day. Who was that asshat? I think it was a Repiglican California congressman who said, there's only one race in America. That's America. People in the social sciences who use this concept, also called agency, tend to be somewhat conservative, or at least dismissive of the very real constraints that culture and history impose on people's actions. It's no coincidence that they often are younger, having come of age in the 1980s, and are generally opposed to analysis based on class. America is a classless society. Remember when the now front man for the hip new group, the Fetals, Bro Fro Mix, Rick Santorum, riffed on that just the other day? That's Marxism talk! That's exactly what he said. To talk about class in the context of the United States of America is Marxism talk! So far, so good. Dr. John is batting a million. Now, he says, an alternative to talking about gender as choice. Gender as performance. The idea here is that gender is not a dichotomy, and that gender is, wow, information-rich, dense, yeah. It's taken me all day to let that, because, you know, we are products of our culture and our history, and when we are taught to think about things in a new way, or in a different way, I don't think it's necessarily new, but in a different way, well, you know, the Rubik's Cube looks like a square until you turn it 45 degrees and, oh! Paradigms have to be challenged. Platonic ideals, if you will. The idea here is that gender is not a dichotomy, and that gender is culturally and historically constructed. In other words, there is no male or female. It's not oppositional either. Not only is it not a dichotomy, it's not oppositional. Or maybe that's the same thing. Maybe I should leave it up to Dr. John to do all the smart writing here. Gender as performance. The idea here is that gender is not a dichotomy, and that gender is culturally and historically constructed. In other words, the way you live as male or female depends on your social setting. And rather than being an internal quality, gender is a thing that you constantly enact through your daily life. Gender emerges through the ways we live it. It involves things like dress, speech, work, play, sex, worldview, and on and on and on. This means gender relations are constantly in motion or in conflict because they comprise the whole mass of the gender performances of all people in a society. Consider if you. I like to decompress a little bit after the program ends, and usually that takes the form of watching a movie quite often, or reading a book. And for some reason or another, and almost sort of goddess of irony, whisper into the universe ish of this. Last night, I don't know why, I sat down and plugged in the earphones. And watched a good bit of Shakespeare in Love, that lovely 90s film, Gwyneth Paltrow, Jafe Fiennes, and a whole host of other wonderful, wonderful actors, we don't have to say actresses. Gender!
And, of course, the plot device in that centers around Gwyneth Paltrow changing genders to play the first Romeo, and how absolutely dangerous that could have been in Elizabethan England. Remember, of course, that the first time the Shakespeare plays were performed, all those roles that are played brilliantly and should have been always played brilliantly by women were played by men, because women were, of course, too delicate. Oh, they were entirely too delicate to be morally conflicted by the vicissitudes of the stage. The same, too, for the ancient Greek theater. The same, too, for the Roman theater. Boys had to play the roles of women. Even to the point of boys being castrated to keep their voices high so that they could sing in Mother Church's choirs in medieval and Renaissance Europe. Why not gender? Gender, says Dr. John, emerges through the ways we live it. It involves things like dress, speech, workplace, sex, worldview, and on and on and on. This means gender relations are constantly in motion or in conflict because they comprise the whole mess of the gender performances of all people in a society. This is a powerful idea because of what we know about the cultural variation among genders, both now and in the past. Among the Navajo and the Hopi, it was the men who traditionally did the weaving, which we construct as a female's work. There are cultures in Central Africa where women were the hunters and warriors. Iroquois, or Haudenosaunee women, held the political power. The same, of course, was true among the Shawnee. There was a war chief and a peace chief. The war chief had to get the permission of the peace chief to go to war. The war chief was always a man. The peace chief, who had the ultimate say-so, was the head of a council of the tribe's women. Not to mention, continues Dr. John, the vast number of cultures that recognize three or more genders. Performance captures all that variation and makes it subject to analysis. Pulling it all together, Dr. John says, it sounds to me like California is trying to validate all types of gender performance among children, though maybe not in those words. That is a very good thing. In addition to being a very good thing, he notes in closing, it's also very threatening to social conservatives because they like rigid categories, hence the outrage. They like categories where categories don't usually really exist. And again, is this not in many senses, and Dr. John, if you're out there while this is running live, I would really appreciate your input. Is this urge toward categorization in rigid form, is this not another white European invention? Like race? Where it would appear to be rigid, but it obtains a certain amount of fluidity depending on what the people in power need the category to mean at any given moment? Unless I get this completely wrong, if you actually sit down and think about this, this means that words like gay and straight are BS terms. Transgendered, all taxonomic attempts have a certain element of invalidity to them. Love is but love. not good love or bad love or right love or wrong love. Love be love among humans. Imagine all the grief and horror and bloodshed that could be avoided if that was in fact the standard. So thank you to Dr. John for getting us going. So that's where we get started. But mercy sakes, what a... And, you know, maybe it is beneficial to sort of keep some of those things in mind, because sooner or later, those rigid categorizations are, we're not going to run, we're not going to butt heads with them. Butt heads. Bob said butt heads. We're not going to, but I have a sneaking suspicion that we're going to find examples of the right wing butting heads with it. Right, wrong, dark, light. No, I'm almost certain of it. By the way, a technical note. Last night, John Fox installed a new chat room over at headonradionetwork.com. This evening, we are in the old one, but we will be likely transferring over to the new one just for functionality's sake and the fact that it saves us a considerable bit of money. But either way you like it, if you've never been to the chat room, pop on by. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Dr. John is listening live, and he says, yes, subject line, rigid categories. Yes, to me it goes all the way back to Platonic ideals. This thing contains an irreducible essence that makes it what it is. And I guess I had to get all the way to my cup of coffee in law school before I had that made plain to me. In your first year of law school, you take a course called, or at least, unless you're going to like Yale or somewhere where they just teach you highfalutin theoretical stuff, I'm told. But in your first year of law school, you have a class called Civil Procedure, and I had a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man for a professor who, you remember me talking about the Google suit last night with Google filing the motion to dismiss based on a failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted? Well, that's part of civil procedure. And my civil procedure professor explained the evolution of law as a long, linear process of people saying, you can't file that suit, for it states to fail a claim upon which relief can be granted. And he said, and he held up a little plastic disc, and he held up a styrofoam coffee cup, because he always came in with a styrofoam cup of coffee, which I don't think the man ever actually got to finish drinking. Yeah, you knew he was a cool guy, because you had his class in the second semester of your first year, and you were baffled when, in mid-April, he canceled class. If it just so happened that his class day fell upon opening day for his beloved Cubs. No class. Class is canceled. Extra credit, if you had a little bit of working knowledge of the box score the next time we got around. But in explaining those Platonic ideals, he held up his coffee cup and he said, we have a rule, you can only drink coffee out of coffee cups. And sets his coffee cup down. And he says, but somebody comes along and says, I want to drink out of this. And he holds up a little plastic disc and he says, and the legal community says, you can't do that. That's not a coffee cup. And all the defense lawyers say, that's not a coffee cup. 12B6. Motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. That's not a coffee cup. Or maybe he was talking about summary judgment. I forget. And he said, but when, no, it was summary judgment. And he screws the little lid off and he goes, and it was one of those little telescoping coffee cups from the 1960s. And it just, and he goes, but it is a cup. And he said, the reason these things are both cups is because they both meet the Platonic ideal of cupness. Even though they don't really. And so, yeah, it does go back to Platonic ideals. Thank you, Dr. John. That there are irreducible essences that make things what they are, even if it doesn't necessarily work. And that's why Platonism is not, it might be, it's lovely. It's a lovely example of humanity sort of groping its way in the darkness toward a sort of self-understanding, but it is by no means an operative philosophy. So keep that, keep those rigid definitions in mind as we go forward. Because, like I said, we are going to run headlong into it in a lot of different ways. And then again, don't worry. We're going to run into some just plain old-fashioned stupid. Anybody? Anybody want to guess before we go there? Where is the plain old-fashioned stupid going to come from? Anybody? Really? Yeah, you know, of course. This is not even fair. And it comes from Radio Rwanda, Fox News. No surprise in the least, I suppose. It comes in particular, let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. It comes from Radio Rwanda's very own Brian Kilmeade. Why are we not surprised? And in it relates to an attempt made by Herr Kilmeade to criticize remarks made by Representative Gregory Meeks, a New York Democrat, for some things that he said regarding the United States Constitution. On MSNBC, Gregory Meeks said, when Social Security first came out, people didn't understand that completely. When Medicare came out, people didn't understand that completely. But over time, we developed, we got it right. The fact of the matter is, when the Constitution came out, people didn't understand that. And there were problems in the Constitution. We didn't say, get rid of the Constitution. We fixed it. Which is true. As we've noted before, ratification of the Constitution, 1787, and they were into their second occupant of the presidency when they suddenly found out that their plan for who would be the vice president was utterly unworkable and had to be fixed quickly. Enter Radio Rwanda. And all of this is true. When Medicare came out, people didn't fully understand it. And it is true that the Constitution was flawed and had some glitches. And Social Security was far from perfect when it came out because it had been crafted specifically to make sure that it functioned only as a matter of privileged access for white folks. Sandra's early on guess. Could it be Cory Booker? You know, it could have been. And I'm not entirely convinced Cory Booker is a Democrat. I'm not, no, not in the least. But no, it's Brian Kilmeade. It's Radio Rwanda. And once again, it's Gretchen Carlson, flanked by two doofi, nominative plural of the Latin doofus. With Kilmeade being one of the doofi, I promise I'm not going to spend an hour on this clip. And I don't have my fingers crossed. But please.
Obamacare for a second, because that's what's still on everybody's mind, even though they're in shirt sleeves and tank tops all on vacation. Everyone.
Wait, stop. No, it's not going to take me an hour to get through this. Obamacare is bad because we don't understand it. That is the new trope. And you know what? There are problems with Obamacare. It's still a health insurance program that throws billions and billions of dollars at the for-profit healthcare industry, which means that to one degree or another, we are still making the illnesses, agonies, miseries, and grim deaths of American citizens a function of the profit motive. And anytime you've got that, you got a problem. Nonetheless.
All right, so let's talk about Obamacare for a second, because that's what's still on everybody's mind, even though they're in shirt sleeves and tank tops all on vacation. Everyone's talking about Obamacare, and a lot of people are weighing in and bringing up A-Rod as an analogy. I thought this was interesting.
Wait. Obamacare is about to be analogized to Alex Rodriguez, performance-enhancing drug user? I got to hear this. Well, actually, I already have.
And they say, well, a Republicans criticizing Obamacare is really not news. It's like A-Rod criticizing baseball after he's been caught juicing. And then it gets even worse from there in terms of credibility.
So now there's a Democratic congressman who is comparing Obamacare implementation to the way in which the Constitution was implemented.
Now remember, this is Gretchen Carlson, who was upset because she couldn't get head over, oh dear.
Back we don't when. Understand it like we didn't understand the Constitution.
This is important. Like we didn't understand the Constitution. Okay? This is operative to all of this, so I'm not going to interrupt.
Criticizing baseball after he's been caught juicing. And then it gets even worse from there in terms of credibility.
So now there's a Democratic congressman who is comparing Obamacare implementation to the way in which the Constitution was implemented way back when.
We don't understand it like we didn't understand the Constitution.
What he's trying to say is that we didn't like the Constitution, didn't understand it at the time for people who existed back then. And the same could be said, he says, for Social Security and Medicaid.
Because, you know, there is that, well, 3/5 clause, you know. There were some people who didn't like the Constitution. Like that.
Here's Congressman Gregory Meeks.
When Social Security first came out, people didn't understand that completely. And when Medicare came out, people didn't understand that completely. But over time, we developed it and we got it right. You know, the fact of the matter is, when the Constitution came out, people didn't understand that. And there were problems in the Constitution. We didn't say get rid of the Constitution. We fixed it.
Right. Because when the Constitution came out, Gregory Meeks's ancestors weren't even 100% human being within the eyes of the operative enabling document of this nation. But we fixed it. I get it. You get it. Let's see who doesn't get it.
The problem is with some of those particular programs like Social Security and Medicaid. Yeah, it's almost worse when people did understand it, because you understood that there's not enough money to pay for Social Security.
Oh, okay. And you know, one of the things that I really love about Gretchen Carlson is she nods her little attack blonde head at the camera so that the nonagenarians watching Fox will nod along with her little, you know, bobbleheads that they are.
And you understood that there's a tremendous amount of fraud in Medicaid.
It's going to get worse.
For one thing, when the Constitution was passed, people fought for it. They cheered. They melted.
Huh?
Let's eat it.
Because you understood that there's not enough money to pay for Social Security, and you understood that there's a tremendous amount of fraud in Medicaid.
For one thing, when the Constitution was passed, people fought for it. They cheered. They melted down the statue of the king in New York City. So no one really had to understand it. Do we continue to fine-tune it? Absolutely.
What is it?
I want to put this as accurately as possible. You unutterably idiotic, dumber than dirt, quit. Brian Kilmeade is describing the American Revolution, which ended in 1782. The Constitution was ratified in 1787. They had pretty much done melting anything down by then. Just saying.
It's kind of a hidden message.
Nobody fought for the Constitution. Now, there had been some fighting prior to the ratification of the Constitution and the Constitutional Convention, but I'm going to send this clip to Dr. Bill. He will be back Monday, and he will have an absolute straight-up conniption. Dr. Bill is entirely too much of a gentleman to have it on the air, but he'll have a conniption. Because this will prove his thesis that we got people running around this country who don't have even the first foggy clue of where this country came from. It was just hatched out of Lee Greenwood's head during a performance of God Bless the USA in Busted Knuckle, Kansas. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Yes, the last battle of the American Revolution was in 1781. Let us hear from the second doofus.
And it's a Democratic message, and the message is Medicaid, Social Security, universal health care. They are de facto constitutional rights. So when he compares those policies to the Constitution and he makes them equivalent, he's saying, yeah, this is a constitutional right. That's part of the Democratic philosophy.
Right. So he's saying, Gregory Meek's saying people don't understand it. Other people look at it and say it just doesn't work. It's impossible to understand. Yeah. For example, what we talked about yesterday with the individual mandate capping individual contributions now, because insurance companies say we can't handle that capping where you want.
By the way, just a little detail here. The statue of King George was burned down in Bowling Green in New York. After the reading of the Declaration of Independence on July the 19th, 1776. Out of it was made 42,088 bullets or musket balls. The stupid is strong with this one. Very, very strong. So that's a starting point. And if that doesn't qualify as a thorn in the side, I don't know what that does. See, when I first saw the story earlier today, I thought it was going to be Brian Kilmeade inserting words like, pick one. The pursuit of happiness into the Constitution. Or asserting that there was some reference to God in the Constitution. But no, 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 no. Far worse. Brian Kilmeade, time traveler. Brian Kilmeade, history effer. Blah. But you know what? I just got a note from Jugapunch in the chat room. He has patched through our buddy Richard, because that's the only way that Richard can reach the program. He's patched through our buddy Richard, who called in the toward the very end of the program last night and had some rather weighty issues to raise. So let me make sure that this is Richard, and let's go to the phones. Hey, Richard.
This is Richard.
How are you?
Hi, Bob.
Good, good.
Yeah, hi. Half asleep, so I will try to be informative. First, I want to dispatch another issue and get that out of the way, which is that you and I were talking about my approaching my congressman,
yes,
George Miller, about the AIC Act. Well, we had quite an event a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned that, you know, I helped steer the nation's first public HMO, the Contra Costa Health Plan,
right,
in Contra Costa County. And we just had our 40th anniversary celebration, which was quite emotional for me. I sat through 1.5 hours of speeches, and I loved every single one of them.
You know, that's a bonus in its own right, Richard. Because when you start out with a statement that I sat through 1.5 hours of speeches, usually the dependent clause that follows that is, I was drinking 5-hour energy through straws just trying to stay awake. But no, you enjoyed them.
I absolutely did. I never believed I would, but it was an emotional event. I mean, we even had some people up on the stage talking about how the health plan had changed their lives.
As I imagine it has, because it's, I wish the rest of the country had it.
Yes, yes, and that's why I keep, you know, I call and I mention it to you and, of course, our listeners from time to time, because it's really so significant. Nobody makes a profit on this thing, you know? So,
and that means nobody is making a profit on someone sitting in agony by the bedside of someone in agony with, say, cancer.
Exactly.
I mean, when you put it in those terms, Richard, isn't that about as brutal and cannibalistic a situation as we can describe, short of rotating granny's thigh on a spit before eating it?
Oh yeah. You know, you want to talk about death panels, you know, don't look this way. I mean, it's the opposite. It's like, you know, we have to run like an HMO. We have to meet all the criteria for HMOs. And one of those criteria set by the state of California is thou shalt not be in the red. They don't want to see health plans that can't meet their costs, their expenses. You know, it's happened. Like hospitals in San Francisco were talking about refusing to take Blue Cross patients because Blue Cross was not paying them. And this happened.
So that wasn't a function of mismanagement by the hospital. It was a function of being stiffed by the for-profiteers, right?
Yes, by the for-profit HMO. And it was Blue Cross Blue Shield in this case. So we're not talking about some, you know, yokel outfit out in the Midwest someplace. I mean, this is, you know, the big guys. And I became involved in this. You know, I'll tell you how it all started. Was maybe 25 or so years ago. I was taking BART to work, and that's our rapid transit
yes.
system in these parts. So I was on BART, and I saw this this display ad at the end of the car, one of these big square ads, and it said, "What's the best kept secret in Contra Costa County?" And it had these little tear cards on it. And the best-kept secret was our HMO, which usually does not advertise, but did in this case. And about simultaneous with this, I started looking at a spreadsheet that was put out by a nonprofit organization in San Francisco that compared every health plan in the whole Bay Area in terms of bang for the buck to to the consumer, as well as user satisfaction, you know, feedback from members. And the Contra Costa Health Plan was the very top of the heap. And I had known something about this already because...
Were you surprised to see those results, Richard?
I was.
Really?
I was because listen, I didn't even know that this HMO existed before this.
What I'm getting at is, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
No, I'm certainly not surprised now, but I mean at the time.
Well, no, I mean I'm not surprised generally philosophically because it does not surprise me that an outfit that is not centered on profit would wind up delivering better customer service and patient service and generate better more positive results for its subscribers or whatever we call them than an organization whose prime directive is make a buck.
Absolutely.
Because, yes. You know, when make a buck is the prime directive, at best, customer satisfaction is going to be secondary.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If it doesn't start out that way, it'll turn into it, especially if stockholders are involved. It's a no-brainer. But these were the things that pointed me toward it. And also, back when I was married, my wife was the head of an editorial association, an association of editors. And I put together a member group for an HMO that was down the street from my house. It was a little HMO, and it was idealistic. And it was, I used to describe it as what Kaiser should have been, but wasn't. And it was a wonderful HMO, and I really liked my doctor, and, everything was cool, but they couldn't make it financially. They went under. They allowed themselves to be acquired by a for-profit HMO located in Kentucky, I believe. And then those guys went under.
Yeah.
So it's like, and my doctor over there was this wonderful guy, and he said, he loved what he was doing, and he never, ever wanted to run his own office again. See, that's one of the goodies for the doctor.
It's getting out of the administrative crap.
Yeah, we do that, you know. We got a dedicated staff that pushes paper, and they're pretty good at it. So the doctor doesn't have to take that home with him. However... we're facing a doctor revolt right now.
And why?
I'm not quite sure. I asked my doctor clued me in on this a couple of months ago, and I asked him to come and address the commission. But he's got clay feet about that. I need to hear more about it. I think one of the issues is that these guys are feeling that they're going to be totally swamped with patients. You know, their patient load is kind of stiff already.
Going to be as a result of...
Well, Obamacare is going to bring a whole hell of a lot of more people into the system.
Yes.
The Medi-Cal patients like us, too. And this whole organization was started 40 years ago. Did I say the word Medi-Cal?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, because for the rest of the country, Medi-Cal is called Medicaid.
Yeah, every state generally, some of the more creative states, I think in Wisconsin it's Badger Care.
Yeah, okay. The deal was that somehow, I don't have the full story about it, but there was some doctor in this county who looked at what the Medi-Cal patients were getting under the usual drill, which is fee for service and go here and see this doctor and go there and see that doctor. And he got the idea that we could provide better health care for everybody if they were in an HMO. And that's how this whole thing got started.
I remember the '80s and the crazed run toward HMOs.
Well, it wasn't like that. It was more, it wasn't a matter of saving money so much as can we expand the coverage? Can we do a better job?
Yeah.
For the people. So that's how this whole thing got started 40 years ago. And it was successful, and it was so successful that the county administrators said, hey, why don't we offer this to our employees, too? You know, and it became called the penny plan among the employees, so they could buy coverage for themselves and their family for a penny.
Wow.
And the alternative, of course, for the government employees was that they could get Blue Cross and, you know, the usual guys, Kaiser. Kaiser's very efficient, and I should say, by the way, that right now, over-the-counter, Kaiser's a little bit cheaper than we are, and that's for the first, you know, for the last 3 years. But before that, we've been cheaper than Kaiser. Well, so Kaiser will undersell us by a little bit, but we cover more. See, that's the difference.
Then they're not cheaper. They're not cheaper.
If you
cover more, but they pay less, then, I mean, sounds like a wash at best.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really nice about us is that we tend to say yes an awful lot. So every once in a while, a procedure for a patient, and it will get disallowed. And then the patient goes back and he puts in an appeal. And about 97% of the time, we prove it, you know. So it's just amazing. I mean, we just tend to say yes, you know.
Because that's what people need to have happen when they are in the midst of a medical crisis or a horror. I mean, I'm looking at a news story right now by comparison and sort of and by contrast, not so much by comparison, but by contrast, it got a little bit of notice in the news earlier in this week. A man was denied this is not the same story as the 15-year-old boy in Atlanta who was denied a heart transplant because they said that he'd had run-ins with the law and didn't have grades that were good enough to get a new heart.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a different story. This is another one. The headline merely reads, life-saving transplant denied and health insurance canceled over 26-cent shortfall.
Jesus.
This is, of course, New Jersey. Well, I shouldn't say of course, but yeah. The man's name is Sergio Branco, and he's a 33-year-old father of three, a truck driver. And he had a bunch of pains, and he was worn out, bone pain. And it turned out he had a weak immune system, and it turned out that it was acute myeloid leukemia. And that's a fast-traveling cancer. And so he needed a bone marrow transplant. And bone marrow transplants are rather common at this point in time. He had chemotherapy, he had transfusions, he took 3 months off from work under the Family Medical Leave Act, and he was one of those people who had for-profit health insurance. And so the doctor said, you got to have a bone marrow transplant if you want to go on being a living human being. And at the end of his Family Medical Leave Act leave of absence, the trucking company canned him.
Yeah.
So they thought, okay, well, it'll be hard, but we'll scrape together the money to pay for the COBRA coverage. And you know what COBRA coverage is?
I do. I've had it.
So then he came up 26 cents short. And his COBRA coverage company, the insurer under COBRA said, "Sorry, your coverage is canceled, and no life saving bone transplant for you, bone marrow transplant."
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, this is just every day in for profit healthcare in America.
Well, yeah. Listen, I want to give out a URL right now. I can't cut and paste it into the chat room, but I do want to announce that anybody can go here. Take a look. It's HTTP, you know, CC Health. So it's CCHEALTH.org/health plan.
Yeah, I'll bet that stands for Contra Costa Health, right?
It does. It does.
Yeah, our buddy Irish Dave noted a few minutes ago, Richard, he said, I heard that the right wingers, as an homage to St. Ronnie, want to rename your county Iran Contra Costa.
Well, I'm not going to say we're not that progressive. I mean, I think that my supervisor, you know, the guy who appointed me, is progressive, but, you know, we have pockets of great wealth in this county, too, and we've got poverty. You know, the city right down the hill from me, Richmond, has been the murder capital of California once or twice.
Wow.
And, and it's a good-sized place. You saw a little bit of it when you were here, I think. You probably drove through part of it. And there's a lot of poverty, and I think the population's around 50,000. But anyway, let me get back to this health plan business. So I signed up, and I signed up my son, and we bought it over the counter. So I was telling the history of it. Started out taking care of Medi-Cal patients, added county employees to the mix. That was successful too. So they opened it up as an HMO, just like any other HMO. So, in other words, an employer could buy it for his or her employees, and you could walk in and put down a check and buy it for yourself, which is what I did.
I don't mean to be prying or nosy, but I'm going to go ahead and ask, what is it on a monthly basis if you're just buying it a la carte?
You know, I don't know. It's a sliding scale depending on age. And they did charge people extra for pre-existing conditions.
Okay, but I mean, is it $1,000 a month or?
Oh God, I haven't paid attention to it because my status has changed a few times, and I'm on.
But if you can go and buy it, I guess I'm trying to lead to a larger point here, Richard. If you can go and buy it a la carte, and it is as popular within the county as you describe it, it doesn't sound like something that would be prohibitively expensive.
Well, no, it isn't. It isn't. But honestly, I can't give you dollar amounts. I mean, when I came in, it cost me, I don't know, maybe $250 to cover myself and my son. But I've gotten older. And I'm on a Medicare right now. The county is selling the health plan for a bunch of different rates, depending on the status of the the member. So considering my age right now, I'm 71. I'm on Medicare, and it's a whole different ball game.
Well, sure, yeah.
So,
I'm just trying to get a picture.
I think I was paying around $900 at the end for me and my son.
Okay.
Per month, which was hard.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, I mean, if I put healthcare, if I went out and bought healthcare for my entire family, and I bought a healthcare plan that was just barely, you know, meet the needs, one of those affairs. The last I checked, for me and three teenagers and Agnes. Yeah, we'd be getting up near $2,000 a month.
Yeah, that's an awful lot of money.
Well, in my world, Richard, $2,000 a month might as well be $2 million.
Yeah, the thing is that it's very, very complicated how these rates work. They've usually offered two different health plans over the counter per age range, okay? The more expensive one covers more and the copays are less. You know how that works. So your out-of-pocket is less and your premium is more. which is what I always went for myself. And this is, you know, let's say if I was visiting you, I don't know where, your nearest hospital is Fayetteville, right?
No, nearest hospital is Somersville.
Okay, I don't
or know. Or Oak Hill, but yeah.
Okay, see,
15, I could be a member 15 of 20 miles.
Health. I could be a member of the Contra Costa Health Plan, and if I had an emergency, I could go to your hospital, and my health plan would cover it.
That's wild, because even Medicaid bucks at the idea of paying for out-of-state health care, at least in this state.
Yeah, I don't know about Medicaid. You know, I can't talk about Medicaid. I'm just talking about my particular status that I remember. So, like I said, now I'm on Medicare, and it's a whole different thing. But, you know, and our CEO arranges, you know, contracts rates with all kinds of health entities around the country. We have right now about 120,000 members, and it is not a popular health plan. It is, in the sense of people, you know, the retail clientele, like with employers, what we call commercial members, or myself, you know, people who actually pay, send in a check once a month. Most people don't know we exist. That's a fact.
Well, and the profiteers are probably go hammer and tongs trying to make sure that remains the case.
Now, you're correct. You know, in other words, we're allowed to, you know, to say that we're here, but sometimes the business people start rankling at what they feel is competition against them. We used to run our own pharmacies, for instance. Now we have a deal with Walgreens. So we do interact with for-profit entities to cover our members.
Sure.
Okay, so we got a contract with Walgreens. We closed most of our pharmacies. We have a number of clinics around the county. And a central hospital, you know, the big hospital, and then they contract with a hospital near me. And they contract with other hospitals in the county. We have a very a very large area near me which has no emergency rooms and no hospitals.
Wow.
And that's,
you don't think of anywhere in Cal, at least back here, you don't think of anywhere in California as being that way.
Well, it's a funny thing. There are problems, you know, this is one of them. We used to have three emergency rooms, but you know, and it's hard for me to describe the amount of territory I'm talking about, but just so take it from me, there's a large area where which used to have a low population, and it's been infilled with housing steadily over the last few years.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Tenet Corporation bought both of the existing hospitals as their for-profit outfit, or they took over the management of these two hospitals. One of them was small, and they closed it. They closed the small one.
Okay.
So we lost that one, and then Kaiser tried to shut their emergency room, and three people promptly died. So the mayor of Richmond got on their case, and they opened their ER again. So
wow.
I mean, California is not necessarily the land of milk and honey, but I'm happy with this local hospital, which once had a terrible reputation, but I've been a patient there recently, and the service I got was unreal. I mean, it was excellent. And the thing I have to say is that when it comes to a place like this, people work there because they want to. The most devoted people are going to want to work in a place like that. And, Bob, I tell you, that is so encouraging because, you know, I'm always asking people one question. How do you like working here? You know, and I ask it in a hospital, and I'll ask a doctor, and I'll ask that when I go to Walmart, you know. And I learn a lot. And in the case of a doctor's hospital in the city of San Pablo, I got just an extraordinary level of employee dedication. And I'd say that about our outfit too. The level of dedication is just tremendous. I'm extremely fond of our clerks.
Well, it's gone are the days, I guess we can say. Mm-hmm. Gone are the days of the little doctor's office and this is the kind of doctor's office I grew up with, and just preparing to describe it makes me feel like I must be describing something from the Pleistocene, Richard. And, you know, I'm 21 years younger than you. But when I was a kid, my dad worked at Reynolds Metals, and he was a furnace foreman, and he had health insurance for his whole family. It was part of the package. And when somebody got sick, we went to the doctor. And there was a doctor and his head nurse and a second nurse and a receptionist. And that was it. And when that man passed away a few years ago, I was told you could not get near the funeral home. So beloved was he that people, you know, turned out to pay their respects. I don't know if that's ever going to happen anymore in this country.
You're talking about a much bigger doctor's office than I remember in New York City, by the way.
Probably. Yeah, that was like probably a two-person affair, right?
At most, you know,
yeah.
Some of these doctors did everything. Yeah.
Compare that with what passes for the health care I get, and I had another experience with it just the other day. I had to be, anytime I'm told that I have to be NPO for anything, I sit there and I watch the clock traverse toward midnight as if it was some sort of witching hour, and the closer it gets to midnight, even if I've eaten a 7-course meal an hour before, the closer we get to midnight, the hungrier and thirstier I get. It's just
what's NPO?
Nihil peros, nothing by mouth.
Huh?
In other words, there was a blood work, and so you know, I showed up for cheap blood work Tuesday, which happens once a month down at my little clinic, and cheap blood work is about $100. And you show up down there, and you know they've got one DO, a couple of PAs, and some maybe an RN or two, and some a couple of LPNs and a couple of CNAs. How's that for alphabet soup? Certified nursing assistant, licensed. Practical nurse, otherwise known as low-paid nurse, and RN, which the RNs say stands for real nurse, and DO, being a doctor of osteopathy, which has which has the rights and privilege. But a DO, osteopathy means, you know, bone study or bone doctor.
Well, they have an interesting history. As a matter of fact, there is a Jewish university that has a branch not far from me in the city of Vallejo on an abandoned Navy base, huge abandoned Navy base, and they are training osteopaths right now.
Well, and in West Virginia, they have all the rights and privileges attendant upon an MD.
Because they are MDs.
No, they aren't MDs.
In around here, they are.
A DO is a DO, and an MD is an MD. If you graduate from DO school, you hang DO after your name. And if you graduate from medical school, you get to call yourself an MD. But they have
around here, it's a DO, but he's treated as an MD.
Right, the same. That's what I'm saying. He has all the rights and privileges that an MD would have. You can graduate from DO school and sit for your board certification in psychiatry, or you can sit for your board certification in brain surgery.
Yeah, it's sort of.
But anyway, we got one of those, and you never, ever, ever see an MD.
Right.
And usually you only see the PA, the physician's assistant.
Right. We don't have PAs in our system, by the way. I don't know why, but we have the primary care provider is a family practice doctor, you know, very close to GP, or an RN. And so these are the gatekeepers, you know, your regular doctor in our system.
Right.
And like I said, we have about 120,000 members, almost all of whom are on Medi-Cal. So.
And yet you're staying afloat.
Well, you know, that part is totally amazing. I think I'll send you a photograph. I was taking photographs at this event, and three generations of our CEOs were there. And it was really a treat for me to see our old guys because they are both cancer survivors. I mean, each one of these guys left because he had cancer.
Wow.
Our present CEO is a woman who came over from Kaiser. But you see, every we meet, the commission meets six times a year, and staff puts and management, you know, put on a great dog and pony show for us, for all the commissioners, about where the money is going, what our stats are, you know, our patient care stats. How's our advice nurse doing? How fast do we answer the phone? Our advice nurse operation is kind of special too. One of our commissioners comes from the phone company, and he got the idea of taking our advice nurse service and selling it to other counties. So if you're way up by the Oregon border, and you slip and fall and pick up the phone and call for medical advice, you're going to get our people in the city of Martinez.
Wow.
And the thing is, and these people are wonderful. They're RNs. They work around the clock. And we've just added a doctor to that group. But the thing is that this is an operation. This little piece of our operation actually brings in money. It pays for itself and more. So the thing that's let me see if I covered enough of this my track. How did I get involved in running it? Well, I was a member for a number of years, maybe 12 years, and then I suddenly realized that there is an actual public body that's involved in running this thing, you know? And I said to myself, shit, I want to do this, you know? How could I not? It's my own HMO. Hey, wow, I can help steer it. So I volunteered, and I was told, well, the commission is full. We don't have room for any commissioners, but why don't you work on one of the committees? So I said, sure. You know, so I was on the member services committee for maybe 8 years. And then I thought, well, why don't I become a real commissioner? So I applied and was accepted.
That's
so
neat.
Let me circle
us back around for a minute. Did you get a chance to speak to George Miller?
Bob, I didn't. He was up there right in front of me. I was sitting in the VIP section, you know, right in front of the stage. He was up on a stage with the other politicians. And I had this line all worked out, you know, to go at him with. And it's like as soon as the event was over, he hobnobbed with the other politicians up there for about 5 minutes, and then he split. I was not able to get at him.
That happens.
Yeah, but I did put in a call.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, we've got so many members. Well, I mean, there's a lot of members of the California delegation, but we've got a right respectable number of California members of the House on the ACACT already, Richard. And
good.
if you were to simply reach out to him and say, listen, won't you stand with, you know,
yeah,
Judy Chu and Jay McNerney and I don't have the list in front of me, I'm sorry, but
well, I've put in the plug to his people, you know, and the other thing was that I just looked at his.
Well, I think George Miller is a big deal, Richard, because he has this long and supposedly really, really collegial working relationship with Nick Rahal, my congressman. If he was to sign the ACACT, it would mean something to Nick Rahal.
Well, you know, Miller has been on the side of the coal miners.
Right, and he's been very concerned with coal miner health.
And that's one of the things I wanted to ask him about was, you know, what is it to you? There's a story there. I don't know what it is.
Well, no, I think the story there is that he cares about, he's got a rep as being a rather liberal Democrat member of the House.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think caring about coal miners is part of caring about workers.
True. True. But I'm sensing there's a backstory, and I'd love to know what it is. I don't know. I was going to ask him about that.
Well, we're going to be, my colleague Bo will be working in September in D.C., at least part of it. I know I'm going to be on the road a whole bunch of September. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to get to, looks like I'm going to go back to Wisconsin for cool. Fighting Bob Fest, and I'm really excited. Dr. Allen, who you've heard me, may have heard me reference on the program.
Yeah.
Has kindly invited me to come down and talk about the AKE Act and mountaintop removal in Texas. In the month of October is one of those months, like June and July of this year, when the House of Representatives is pretty consistently in session. So I'm looking toward a month of October that's going to involve me being in Washington, D.C., what's the technical term, a bunch.
Okay.
So when we do that, maybe if I've got the presence of mind and whatnot, maybe we can coordinate our efforts. So if you've written to Representative Miller once, you know, give it a couple of weeks and write back.
Okay.
Because sometimes, you know, and that's not you know, and of course, you know, you are a genial and decent human being, Richard. You're not going to write and say, you know, hey, damn it, you know, what?
I don't know.
But, you know, generally, sometimes it's a squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing. You got to say, I wrote to you 2 weeks ago and I have yet to receive a response. Or if you receive a response saying not right now, you write back and you say, I respectfully beg to differ. And because, see, one of the things you'll get, and we've had this, is the staffer will write back and say, well, we haven't signed on to the AKE Act, but I wanted to let you know that we signed on to the Clean Water Protection Act, as if that is some sort of equivalent. It is a false equivalence. What you have to do is you have to write back and say, well, that's great, and that's a wonderful bill as far as it goes, but it doesn't have the potential to end mountaintop removal ever at all.
I see. Okay.
Because what the Clean Water Protection Act does is it ends one practice associated with mountaintop removal, but the mountaintop removal companies are already learning how to do mountaintop removal without doing that practice. They're anticipating that it might go away. Whereas, you know, since this is a discussion about health and health care, Richard, what we have to do is find out why it is that if you happen to be involved in the accident of birth or migration or whatever that ends up with you living beneath a mountaintop removal operation, why is it that you have a 40% greater chance of getting cancer? Why is it that you have a massively increased risk of heart disease? Why is it that if your wife becomes pregnant and doesn't smoke and takes care of herself, she has 181% greater chance of giving birth to a baby with respiratory or musculoskeletal birth defects than a woman who doesn't smoke, who doesn't live near mountaintop removal?
By the way, I think that's a very valid issue. You know, the environmental, effects on health care. One of my doctors once mentioned to me that in this area around here, we have a really high rate of asthma. We also happen to have a few oil refineries.
Yeah, and those are related. And see, that's one of the things about the AKE Act, and I haven't really gone into detail about this in a while, so I hope it won't be tiresome to people. For so long, we focused on issues related to water and mountaintop removal because it was obvious. You know, you open the tap, the stuff that looks like tomato soup comes out, it smells like grim death, and you go, oh, they've effed up our water. And then people start getting sick, and you tend to, you know, you sort of connect A to B, and you say, well, it must be the water. No, because the whole time they've been blasting around you, and we're talking about ultra-fine microparticulates, Richard, that are less than 1/100th the diameter of a human hair, roughly the size of a virus. And if you're breathing that every day, bear in mind that these are tiny little pieces of sandstone particles, which under a scanning electron microscope look like jagged glass, and congratulations, that's how they behave when they get inside your lung. They pass through the lungs, they go into the bloodstream, and they go into the cells on a cellular level. They penetrate the cell wall.
Yep. You know, there are certain parts, let's say, of the United States, certain areas, where we've got a lot of environmental crap going on.
Well, and I don't know if we can say certain parts of the United States. What I think we can say more accurately, Richard, is in the United States, in areas where people are poor, they are made more the worse by virtue of the fact that that's where we cite all of our toxic activities. Because
we breathe the same air, so that our pollution blows right across the bay, and they got a high cancer rates in Marin County, where everybody's rich. Not everybody, mind you, but.
No, but I get, you know, a little two-bedroom bungalow can go for $3.5 million in Marin.
Yeah, but they're
I spent one lovely evening in Mill Valley, and
oh, yes.
and what a little what a little slice of paradise that was,
isn't it? Yeah.
But that whole area is to me. So you know,
I'm up in the hills, what are called the Berkeley Hills, except it's above Richmond, and. I can look out the window. I can look out my living room window and see the Golden Gate Bridge if I look one way, and I can see the Chevron Refinery if I look the other way.
I'd be looking toward the Golden Gate Bridge a lot more, I think.
and there's a plume of steam that comes out of that refinery, and if I look at the plume, I can see which way the wind is blowing.
And see the
wind is always blowing away from my house. It was just that, remember when that refinery caught fire not too long ago? Then the plume was coming over in my direction, but almost always it doesn't.
Yeah, and the Richmond City Council recently voted to sue Chevron, which I thought was magnificent.
It was, considering how corrupt they've been in the past and in the pocket of the oil company. But anyway, let me get back to to the health issues, because if you don't mind, I have more to talk about.
No, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, hopefully I'll be able to get back to this, and maybe I can answer some questions, because I'm looking at the spreadsheet. It's on an 11 by 17 inch sheet of paper, where our secretary put together a spreadsheet showing all of the California standard plans under Obamacare. And we are trying to ramp up for this. So now what we did, we didn't have enough doctors. Oh, let's say a couple of years ago. So the county supervisors decided to raise the pay of our doctors to entice more people to work here. And almost simultaneously, all the other county employees got a pay cut. And this has not gone over very well among the county employees, and rightfully so.
I can well imagine.
So that's one of the, you know, and a lot of these people are really dedicated and wonderful people to, you know, to have, and they're sore, and I can't blame them. You know, things haven't been good all the way around. The other issue, as I mentioned, is that we've got a bunch of young doctors, and they're, family practice people. Primary care people, and they're beginning to rumble that they're going to get out of medicine. They're going to stop doing this. And I need to learn more about it. I can't talk.
I worry about the people who make those statements, Richard.
That was my doctor. My own doctor who I like.
I understand that, but I still worry about the people who make those statements in a situation in which the things that they allege are going to be the problems have not become problems yet.
It's not just Obamacare. I think part of what's happened is that we've made our appointment system much more effective. And we had at least 20% people don't show up. I mean, haven't shown up for their appointments. So we've put in place a much more aggressive appointment system that confirms that people are going to show up with robocalls and, you know, all kinds of other things. And it's pretty crazy, but it's being effective, and so the doctors are simply being hit with more patients showing up, so they're feeling that. The rumblings that I'm hearing is that they're talking about getting out of primary care, maybe becoming specialists, maybe getting out of medicine altogether. So I will find out more. You know, I obviously this is of great concern to me.
I think that would be beneficial. And there is no getting around the fact that, I mean, look, the purpose, and I'm not being corrective here, and I sometimes slip up and use the right wing's word for this act. I prefer the actual name of the law, Richard.
The Affordable Care Act.
The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Because that's actually its goal. That other term makes it sound like it's some sort of hubristic cult of personality.
You know, I have to confess, I think the thing, I'm still bitter about the fact that there's no public option in this.
Well, I am too, but I wanted to go to that in this conversation.
Okay.
Because I want to go back and reinforce something, and, you know, this is a fairly small little community, Horn family commune that we've built here.
Correct.
But maybe it would have more resonance if, you know, Ed Schultz said it, or if Stephanie Miller said it, or Tom Hartman said it, you know. But the fact of the matter is, it cannot be reiterated enough, at least until people understand that that's why it happened, that the reason that the individual mandate stood in the Supreme Court is because it stood to the benefit of the for-profit insurance industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now,
yeah.
John Roberts may be the meanest, smartest, sneakiest, underhandedest, lower than a snake's belly in a wagon rut conservative Republican, and those are the same terms, in the entire universe. Because what a beautiful dig that was. He said, no, you can't uphold the individual mandate on a commerce clause basis, even though we had laws going back to the very origins of this nation in which American citizens were required to purchase certain things, contrary to the statements of the teabaggers, you know, things like the law that said every American citizen shall maintain powder and shot. Okay? It wasn't may, it was shall, you know, so they could be part of that well-regulated militia that the Second Amendment talks about.
Yep.
And nonetheless, you know, there's Limbaugh and the Hannity job and the rest of them. Well, you can't force Americans to buy something they don't want. Well, did it before. But so the Supreme Court strikes down that argument that it can't be that the individual mandate can't be enforced on a commerce clause basis. But then John Roberts says, "Yeah, but you know what? Congress has the taxing power under the Constitution of the United States." And if we want to consider the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act as a function of Congress using its taxing power, then Congress absolutely has that power upheld. So in one fell swoop, we funnel billions of dollars to the for-profit health insurance industry, and at the same time, John Roberts enables the Republican Party to tar Barack Obama as another one of them goddamn tax and spend liberals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's that. Meanwhile, and I went to a bunch of conferences hosted by a wonderful organization in D.C. called Families USA. And they put on a radio row, heck, I'll be there next January. Malloy was there this last time through. It was wonderful. Went and had pho at a Vietnamese restaurant. Had a lot of fun. But they would bring these people in to talk about the effects of the Affordable Care Act. And I guess because I've got a dog in this hunt because I am uninsured.
Right.
And Medicaid access means something to me because, you know, I certainly don't, well, anyway. I began to look at the Medicaid expansion part of this, part of the Affordable Care Act, as the real, live, honest-to-God, Richard, important part of the law. Because you the reason I triggered onto this was you said, I guess I'm still kind of bitter because there's no public option. The fact of the matter is, and the reason I maintain, I mean, you can go and call up the Supreme Court case and you can read all the palaver about it that you want to. But the Supreme Court is a political body, whether we like it or not, and always has been from the days of Marbury versus Madison to the present. It cloaks itself in this notion that it operates on some sort of Olympian plateau where it's above politics and partisan bickering and arguing, and that is absolute unmitigated bullshit. There is no more political creature in this country than John Roberts. And so, the right wing of this country quietly understood the most dangerous to them, to their way of thinking, part of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And that was the Medicaid expansion. And because it is dangerous, it was struck down. Not the individual mandate to participate in a corporatized system, but the state mandate for all states to participate in the expansion of Medicaid. Because, as you probably know much better than I, Medicaid is a universal single-payer system.
You're right, and it's wonderful that way.
Okay, so work with me here.
Yeah.
The right way, and what I was saying about going to these radio rows, is I began to get frustrated and say, please, for the love of Christ, can't we talk about the Medicaid expansion? Because this is so important. This is important to people who are working at McDonald's and don't have health care, who are working their asses off. You know, they can't get 40 hours a week at McDonald's, so they work 25 hours a week at McDonald's, and maybe they work 20 hours a week somewhere else. And right. In neither place can they get health insurance. And they don't make enough to buy for-profit health insurance any way you slice it.
Right.
So the Medicaid expansion includes, at the present time, it goes up to 137% of the poverty line. So one of those numbers means that a family of four who makes about $36,000 a year, and this is important, Richard, qualifies for Medicaid under the expansion.
Correct. I'm looking at it right now.
The other thing that happens is that one of the nastiest parts of Medicaid in most of the states, especially southern states, is that if you own so much as your own shoelaces, you were deemed too rich for Medicaid.
Yes, I know that.
I mean, if you worked a job flipping burgers and lived in a cardboard box over a Subway grate, you had too many assets to qualify for Medicaid.
Is that the case where you are in West Virginia?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, well, I mean, you know, I lost Medicaid here when Agnes and Ferg were involved in the car wreck and my beloved 16-year-old Dodge pickup truck got totaled. We were automatically too wealthy for me to be able to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Over the property value payout, property damage payout, on a on a 16-year-old worn-out Dodge pickup truck,
the red one.
Yeah. So, what I'm getting at here is the Supreme Court struck down the Medicaid mandate because if Congress can say it should be at 137% of the poverty line, it is also within Congress's power to reevaluate as they did with CHIPS. Remember the difference between CHIPS and S-CHIP, where the Children's Health Insurance Program went from a certain level up to 200% of the poverty line?
I don't remember the details, but I remember there's...
So that's roughly how it worked out. Congress has the power to change where that threshold is.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And so by way of addressing your statement that you're still kind of bitter because there's no public option, I want ultimately... The end result in this country to be that there is universal single-payer health care.
Absolutely.
And the Medicaid expansion, I absolutely am convinced, the Medicaid expansion was put in there as a means of effecting that, Richard.
Okay.
Because the means testing goes away, it's 137% of the poverty line, which takes in a hell of a lot of the working poor.
Yeah. And
Congress down the road, if the Democrats ever get, could say 137%, that's not high enough. It needs to be 175%. And a little later, it could be 250%, and then 600%, or something like that.
Okay.
And the next thing you know, everybody's not on Medicare. You know, I remember the Medicare for All bill, which I thought was brilliant.
But
everybody is on Medicaid.
Yeah, that's bad.
And it's bang, universal single-payer health care.
Yeah. You know what I like to say sometimes is I don't want Medicare for all. You know, maybe the VA for all, you know. But what you're saying makes as much sense, maybe better.
And that's why overturning that state mandate was so pernicious. I mean, I'm deeply, deeply concerned about what maybe I need to start writing blog posts, because I guess that's how you get things paid attention to in 2013. But the fact of the matter is, the phrase I use, Richard, is that we have created, by virtue of the striking down of the state mandate for the Medicaid expansion, we have created a Plessyized America. And you know what Plessy versus Ferguson was? It was the Supreme Court case that ratified the idea of separate but equal.
Oh.
Okay? Based on skin color. Well, yeah. Now we have an economic Plessyization of the United States based upon geography. If you are working your ass off every day in California or Oregon or Washington or New York or Connecticut, or oddly enough, even Arizona, because they opted into Medicaid, if you're working your ass off every day, but you're not making, you know, you're below that 137% threshold, you get access to health care. If, on the other hand, in Georgia Stan or North Carolina Stan or Mississippi Stan or Alabama Stan or Tennessee Stan or Louisiana Stan or Texas Stan or Arkansas or Talibandiana, you're working your ass off just as hard and making just as little money, you get to die for want of health care.
Yeah. Now, we have had an additional operation that's been called basic adult care. It's now called basic health care, which is specifically for people who fall between the cracks, you know, people who are suitably poor and do not qualify for Medi-Cal. And this is funded directly by the county, and it's just really good to have it.
That's because in California, you still have enough power in government that people still think government works and functions and has a place in human life.
I'm just talking about my county, though. I mean, this is not happening down in Orange County, believe me.
I understand that.
It's going to change. Everything here is going to change. What we have been doing, a few years ago, we started another category of coverage, in a way, where the patients can elect to not go to our clinics, but to see local doctors in the community who have signed on with us. And so in order to take care of more of the people who are going to come pouring in under the Affordable Care Act, we've expanded our neighborhood doctors, and this includes specialists, too. But the one fly in the ointment for them is that we pay them Medi-Cal scale. So let's say if you were you're a person like I used to be, and pay for the health plan over the counter, you're paying the county a lot more than they're going to get from Medi-Cal for their members, and your money is going right into the big pot. That's mostly Medi-Cal. But if you see a specialist in your neighborhood, that specialist is going to get reimbursed at the lowest possible pay rate. What's in it for him is that we're going to handle all his paperwork. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You see, we are going
to... Let doctors be doctors and let people who know how to fill out medical coding fill out medical coding.
Exactly, and there are other things that you can do to sweeten it, too. Like, for instance, paying them on time, paying them quickly. It has a great benefit. You know, I was working for the city. I was an audio specialist for City College of San Francisco. I was a city employee. And one of the nice things, you know, was that when we worked with vendors, we paid them quickly. And it makes a tremendous difference. There are little ways that you can...
Right, and that runs contrary to the American profit model, because I don't care what part of American business you're in, you will find out pretty quickly that if you're dealing with big corporations, they will hold out payment on contracts to you until the 90th day.
Yeah, right, or worse. Anyway, I'm looking at the spreadsheet right now, and it's there's a range of health plans here. This is under the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, there are four different plans called the Silver Copay Plan. And then there's a Bronze Plan, a Platinum Plan, Gold, and Catastrophic for young people. And, you know, our CEO was explaining all this during the last meeting. And, you know, we had some worries, frankly. Especially in terms of the copays and the deductibles, there are out-of-pocket limits. For the young people, the 21 to 30 age group, the out-of-pocket limit is $6,350 a year. And as you know, these are the people who, when we were that age, we knew that nothing was ever going to happen to us. It was bad.
Bulletproof.
Bulletproof, yeah. We were never going to die. We were never going to have gallbladder trouble, right?
And, gallbladder? What the is a gallbladder? I don't need a stinking gallbladder.
Right. So in that group, we're worried that the people are not, you know, they're going to all of a sudden go, you know, something happens to this woman and all of a sudden she's faced with these huge medical bills. And doesn't have the money to pay, you know, to make that maximum out of pocket. That's per year. And then at the other end, the silver copay plan, that's $2,250, and we know that people aren't going to be paying it. And then, you know, what are they going to do? They're really going to sick the IRS on these poor folks? Oh, boy. What makes this even worse is that the doctor, he's got to pay these copays to the doctor and won't have it, and now the doctor's going to have to get a collection agency. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah, it becomes a nightmare.
Yeah, and we're
because it's profitized.
Well, I don't know what it is. It's just, people are not going to be ready for it. The poor folks are just not going to have the money to reach that out-of-pocket limit. We have, you know, copays that differ from one plan to another. We have deductibles that differ from one plan to another. And we have percentages, such as what I'm looking at here, under the silver copay plan, in other words, a relatively poor range of folks. A hospital stay, they have to pay 10%. For the room and 10% for the physician or surgeon.
And you know what? In big surgery situations or, you know, long-term hospitalization situations, those 10 and 20% are where the vast majority of those monumental medical bankruptcies come from.
So I shot up my hand and said, 10% of what? And the CEO fired back to me, that's 10% of our contracted rate with the hospital. That was a good answer.
Yeah, it was, because that's one of the bigger dodges.
I know. I've been there. One of the nice things about being in my position, we have 15 commissioners, and there's two of us who are really system users as well as commissioners. We are on both sides of the fence, and I value my position as being the guinea pig. It's beautiful. You know, all this bad stuff.
Well, a commission needs that.
Yeah, so
otherwise it's all academic and the commission or the board or whatever sits around basically wondering what the little people are doing tonight.
Yeah, and middle management may cover it up and stuff. So I walk right into the swinging door, my nose is bloody. I call member services and start yelling, and it's a wonderful position to be in. I love it, So recently this woman came to the meeting. This is a public meeting, right? And this woman came to the meeting, and she's a foster parent, okay? And she walks into the meeting and starts bitching about the fact that she is having so much trouble making appointments for herself and for her kids. And I thought, oh, my God, this is wonderful. I want her on the commission. And I talked to her, and I talked to her, and I talked to her, and God damn it, she joined. She's one of us now. And at that, you know, at that anniversary event, she was there, and she brought her four girls with her.
Wow. And
I did that.
And I mean, was there? Well, how was the response?
To what?
Well, to her showing up to the commission.
Well, I can't talk about the other people. I practically had tears in my eyes. I just said to myself, she's one of us. You know, she's not wealthy. See, most of the commissioners do this out of the goodness of their hearts. They don't really have a dog in the hunt, you know. And so she showed up, and I thought, boy, this woman's got spunk. She's on my side of the fence. And but we talked about, you know, she submitted an application one meeting later, and every commissioner voted on her. I mean, it was unanimous.
Wow.
So she's in. And, you know, if anybody who's living in Contra Costa County who's listening to me right now, you know, there is.
And there probably are.
Yeah. Well, I know we got at least one other. Here's a great opportunity. And look, as you're talking about this, Bob, I want to emphasize for everybody that you can have this somehow. You know, it's going to take a lot of work, but we've done it. There are now three other counties in California that have set up health plans based upon ours. And those are Santa Clara County.
And let me ask you this. Is the revenue derived entirely from the participants?
Oh, no.
Well, I didn't no. Well, that's what I meant. I mean,
Well, it is in the sense that, you know, this horrible term, capitated, you know, which to me means once you've cut off the patient's head, you put it back on. That's the definition.
Yes, yes.
Capitated. But yeah. Anyway, it means what? Each member of an HMO. So for each Medi-Cal member, we get a flat fee from the state. So that's where most of the money comes from, and then we get some grants. And
I would love to see the actual legal structure behind all of the, or I don't mean legislative
yeah.
structure behind all this, because I'm trying to envision a situation where, say, some more progressive West Virginia county could enact something like this.
It would be beautiful, Bob.
Well, sure, no doubt it would be. But I have a sneaking suspicion there has to be something in some underlying enabling legislation that makes it possible for that health plan to exist.
Well, you know, we have a county lobbyist in Sacramento, which is our state capital, who goes around knocking on doors. Our CEO goes to Washington every once in a while. I really don't know what these people do, but I know they're pulling. You know, there's an awful lot that I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of people on staff who work very dedicatedly to make this thing go. We are actually providing a conduit for people who are undocumented immigrants. It's not direct, but we're a conduit for them. It's like we can cover their children. And we, you know, because of legal...
Good God, be careful what you say, or the some right-wing lurker to this program will have... You'll finally get famous, and, you know, Glenn Beck will be melting down about that.
My 15 minutes, I don't want them to be used that way. You know, the thing is that we have there's a volunteer clinic in the middle of the county. You know, volunteer nurses, volunteer doctors... who take care of undocumented immigrants. So this is no county money is going to that. But it's like our people can tell people, hey, there's this resource for you. Their children get covered. And we also made a deal with some, if I have this story straight, some obscure outfit that's run by the Catholic Church that has enabled amazing discounts on prescription drugs for people who don't have coverage.
Yeah.
Or actually anybody. So, I mean, it's amazing. You know, they've worked out some bulk deal. So Now we ourselves have somehow worked out some way that we've saved $6 million on prescriptions in the last couple of years. And I'm not quite sure how we did it, but it's working. You know, it's like, so our staff can find deals, can find foundations, get grants. So there's a lot of that's been going on, too. And that's, I guess that's about what I have to say. If anybody has any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Okay. Well, you're in the chat room, right?
Yeah.
Well, and it's the old chat room, not the new one.
It's a chat room. It's got the people on the right-hand side now.
Yeah. Anybody that wants to pop in and pop into the chat room, Richard's there, and he'll field any questions that you may have. Richard, I really appreciate the depth and the detail of the conversation. Of course, anytime we get together to talk, it's always fascinating. And
well, I feel guilty that I don't understand more than I do.
But there's a big difference between Richard saying, I don't understand more than I do, and I feel guilty about it, and Brian Kilmeade, as witnessed beforehand, saying you heard that clip, I presume.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
Because, see, the right wing says, if they don't understand it, it can't happen. Even if the rest of us understand more of it than they do.
Yeah. I agree with you, by the way, that this is movement in the right direction. And I'm worried at the same time, as I mentioned, these people are not going to be able to come up with their out-of-pocket, their copays and all that. And I mentioned this to our marketing director, and she said to me that she's very worried about the same things. And I am very grateful that we have, the individuals that we have working in this system. It gladdens my heart to know these people.
That is it's a wonderfully humane statement, Richard. Oh, by the way, Richard, you just signed out. Now you.
Oh, no, I got timed out, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, I'm back in.
Okay, well, excellent, Richard. Thank you very much for your for all of your insights and all of your input. And remember, about the start of October, just put a little star on your calendar or something. Get with Bob about talking to George Miller.
Okay.
All right.
We'll do. Yeah. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
You take care.
Bye, everybody.
Bye now. Calling from Contra Costa County, California. That is Richard. A long, long time friend of the program. It is about 2 minutes before the hour. 1 hour left in the program. If you want to get in on the conversation, if you want to talk healthcare, that is more than okay. Or we can go down the road to some other stuff. I'm sorry. I've got a funny one here for you. Well, sort of funny. You know how Dr. John's note talked about the right-wing urge to categorize and insist that that things are either black or white, day, night, wet, dry, right, as a function of agency theory, as opposed to performance? I'm not sure which way we categorize this, but it's a story out of Agence France-Presse. It has to do with a zoo in China. A zoo particularly being the People's Park of Luohe, I think I'm saying it right, in Henan. And apparently the zoo has a bit of a fraud problem. And it came to light in one could easily say are funny circumstances. An individual was taking her son through the zoo. And much as any parent does with any child, you know, the cow goes moo. And was pointing out the squawks of the parrots and the moo of the cow, and then pointed at the lion and said, only the lion said, woof, woof, woof. Lions don't do that ordinarily. The zoo was trying to pass off a dog as a lion. There was a white fox in a leopard's den. Another dog was being passed off as a wolf. And a pair of koi poo rodents were being passed off, oddly enough, as a snake. The zoo's animal department chief tried to explain away the barking lion by saying that, well, we do have a lion, but it's been sent off to another zoo for breeding purposes, and one of our employees kindly volunteered to put his dog in the lion cage over safety concerns. And apparently there is a function, an application in China called Weibo, which is Sino-Weibo. It's similar to Twitter. And folks have been having great sport over that. Do you remember the stories about rat being passed off as pork? I will dare say that this is a continuing example of the miraculous impact of capitalism on China. I don't know what the Chinese, what the Mandarin characters for This Way to the Egress look like, but you could just, this way to the barking lion. Please, the barking lion. But then, how many, isn't every story out of Fox News a barking lion story? Yeah. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and like I said, they're an abundance of thorns. Good God, there's a right-wing, anti-gay hate group, all of which is probably redundant, that is now officially angry at Radio Rwanda. They are mad at Radio Rwanda because they claim that Radio Rwanda is turning all gay. Now, it was just a matter of days ago that Attack Blonde Gretchen Carlson was having a conniption alongside her flanking doofy over transgender issues. But nonetheless, no, they're turning gay. Please. And from the police blotter. The little lights went off when I saw this story because I was sitting here listening to Malloy last night, and he was talking about going to the farmer's market and bringing home these great big honking heirloom tomatoes, which are wonderful. And then I saw this story and went, wait a minute. Dateline Arlington, Texas. Subject line, War on Drugs. somewhere near Arlington, there is a sustainability garden called the Garden of Eden. On August the 2nd, the Arlington, Texas police raided the Garden of Eden. And, of course, the Garden of Eden was being tended by people who had rather shaggy hair and mustaches and little goatees and, you know, hippies. So necessarily, that you know, if you got people with anything longer than a crew cut, and women wearing anything other than an A-line tee dress for gardening, you're going to need your SWAT team. You're going to need your undercover officers. You're going to need your highly expensive, probably $500 or more per hour to run police SWAT team helicopter when you raid the Garden of Eden Sustainability Garden. And they came in and destroyed the whole garden. They handcuffed the people working in the Garden of Eden Sustainability Garden. On the ground, I said, on the ground, I'll shoot! And they yanked up their tomato plants. Because the war on drugs frenzy in Texas, Stan, is so out of control, and the police so out of control, that out of an abundance of caution, they confiscated the tomato plants because they weren't sure but thought that the tomato plants growing in the Texas heat in August, and one would presume in the Texas heat in August that tomato plants would have little tomatoes on them. They confiscated the Texas plants because the Texas tomato plants because they weren't sure if Texas tomatoes were a euphemism for the marijuana. Guns were drawn on the people at the sustainability garden, you know, where they do communist things like composting, or perhaps French intensive raised bed gardening for soil conservation. Ooh. Everybody on the ground! This is a raid! We checked in with the SOD at the DEA, and they said tomato plant is a common euphemism for your marijuana cultivation. Get on the ground or we'll blow your brains out. Put your hands behind your back. Roy Jean, start a confiscating them marijuana plants. But Chief Joe Bob, I don't want to hear no buts. Uproot them. But Chief, they got little marijuana tomatoes growing on them. That just means they're crafty. It's probably some genetically modified hippie organism. Owner Shelley Smith told WFAA-TV, they came here under the guise that we were doing a drug trafficking marijuana growing operation. They destroyed everything. And I think by everything, they meant everything. Sleep tight tonight, America. The Arlington, Texas Police Department is on the job protecting you from marijuana tomatoes. What a country! Honest Hoopy. There you are. I love nothing more in life than having a garden. And nothing goes better with a fresh tomato. This is an unpaid endorsement. Than Benton's Bacon. Good sourdough bread, fresh lettuce, Benton's Bacon, a freshly sliced heirloom tomato, and maybe a little smear of that horseradishy mayonnaise if you're into the horseradish. Oh. Bliss. You can just use your favorite search engine for Benton's Bacon out of East Tennessee. There is no better bacon on planet Earth. Ferg was telling me because I was talking about how we. Got a neighbor, got some tomatoes coming in about now. This just right now is when the tomatoes start really happening around here. And I told him I had ordered some Benton's Bacon. It's not much more expensive than stuff you buy in the grocery store, only it's about a million times tastier. And Ferg said, Dad, I just want to do a few slices. I want to fry them perfect. I don't want to get them scorched or anything. I want to fry them perfect, and then I want to melt down some semi-sweet chocolate. He said, you know how like at Godiva when we're walking through Union Station, they got those strawberries dipped in chocolate? I said, yeah. He said, I want to dip some bacon in chocolate. Oh, dear. I've created a monster. But I don't think it's a bad monster. Come on, you know, unless you're like, you know, vegetarian, you know the idea of bacon dipped in semi-sweet chocolate is making you go, wait a minute! Can't. I know we got a lot of people. Tomatoes are a delightful thing to grow from time in the summer. They're easy. You can grow one or however many. And for those of the members of the Horn family commune who are familiar with cannabis and that sort of horticulture, please tell me, is there any way humanly possible that even if the SOD of the DEA in conjunction with the NSA and the CIA and the FBI have determined that tomato is a euphemism for cannabis, please, once you get there and you see the tomatoes hanging on the plants, or let's say they're just little seedlings, please tell me how in the name of God or the Flying Spaghetti Monster or nothing at all, how do you confuse a tomato plant with dope? I'm utterly, completely, totally, undeniably stymied. In all of, does the Arlington SWAT team live on the moon when they're not busy raiding sustainability gardens? Okay, confirmation coming in both from Dr. John and from Sandra. Oh yeah, says Sandra, bacon and chocolate is effing awesome. Oh, we're going to have some fun here. And Dr. John, noting oh, yeah, that's a thing. Not really to my taste, as I like each alone too much, but it's the whole sweet, savory, fatty combo that appears in so many classic food pairings. Oh. I have a feeling something magical is going to happen. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Hi, this is Kenny.
Hey, Kenny.
A resident medical marijuana grower out in Hawaii.
Oh, well, hello.
I'm tired of worrying about it, too, I'll tell you.
I can well imagine, but I mean...
We just went through 3 days of at least 3 hours each day of helicopters doing circles over top of our house. Not just our house, I'm saying my whole neighborhood, the next neighborhood, this whole county, okay? As Barack Obama is sitting there saying, we're going to lower the drug war or whatever, it's full force.
And, of course, the DEA to this day has not acknowledged the fact that individual states have the right to declare whether or not cannabis has a medical legitimacy. They insist that they retain the right to make that determination outside of science, right?
Right. Yeah, even according to Sanjay Gupta just past week, you know? I love the fact he actually apologized. He must not be a Republican because I don't think a Republican knows what the word apologize ever means.
No, nor I.
Yeah, so, excuse me, you know?
Right.
But, today's our first day without helicopters, you know, buzzing our neighborhood, but they're probably over on the other side of the island today.
So I guess what, there's absolutely no crime that needs being attended to in Hawaii these days, and so they're just so bored they're buzzing the medical marijuana cultivators?
Well, mostly it has to be the mainland because we as a county and we as Hawaii has voted it down. So... that means the only funding, we voted the funding down. That's where you have to go, is funding.
Holy mackerel. I had no idea.
We voted the funding for the helicopters down, and so what they do, they just said, we're DEA, we're national, so we just come in anyway. So
has anybody been busted?
They've been really weird about that, because most people, if you stay under your numbers, they don't mess with you.
Huh.
We're good on that, and we've actually, I know people that have... actually called the cops to report some plants stolen and, had filled out police reports and had the cops work with them. So it's not the local community. It's the, but the fucking feds.
Aye.
You know, I'm tired of feeling that way.
And see, that's one of the things that just drives me bananas, Kenny, because on the one hand, if it means keeping the wrong people from voting, the Republicans and the right-wingers are like, oh, states' rights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's always states' rights when it's for them.
Right. But if it's the states' rights to decriminalize a substance and in by extension otherwise innocent people, well, what states' rights?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me crazy. That makes me crazy.
Yeah, I think we're lucky because we have very, very little influence from ALEC out here. So I think there's only like two state representatives or... I think I looked up maybe three that have any influence by ALEC. And so that makes a big difference.
Oh, I'll bet you're absolutely right. and you know, you could probably spot the ALEC people from a mile away because they'd be the only people on the islands not wearing a floral shirt, right?
And they got the little, guess what, on their lapel?
The ALEC?
Flag pin.
Oh, of course, of course. No, I joke about...
because I'm patriotic.
I joke about the Hawaiian shirt, but... from time to time, we travel, and for mountaintop removal work and stuff, and we rent through Enterprise because that's where Cold River Mountain Watch's account is. And I read some story about Enterprise rent a car the other day, or well, no, it was a year or two or three ago, about, you know, they're very starched, and, you know, everybody has to show up in dress pants and shirt and tie, dresses for the women. And they had, like, a corporate board meeting, Kenny, for what they were going to do about the enterprises in Honolulu. And the Hawaii people had to go to the board and say, listen, if you don't let us wear aloha shirts at work, nobody's going to rent the cars from us because nobody's going to trust us. And so it was a big corporate PR deal. Enterprise Board allows Hawaiian Enterprise Associates to wear colorful floral shirts.
Hey, even Santa Claus wears shorts out here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Come on.
Oh, God. How long have you been in Hawaii, Kenny?
It just went past 10 years.
May I ask where you immigrated from?
New Orleans. I've spoke with you before, Bob.
Yeah, we have.
Yes, I moved from New Orleans, I don't know how, but luckily 1 year, not even a year, 6 months before the hurricane hit. And because we knew we had already been through two tropical storms in New Orleans, and we knew it was only a matter of time before the city went under. And so we really didn't want to be there when it happened. So we were trying to find, and New Orleans, once we came to Hawaii after 9/11, we came over here right after 9/11 and saw real estate was cheaper than New Orleans. It's like, where do I want to live? In Hawaii or New Orleans? I think Hawaii.
I'll take paradise, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me take just a moment to impose upon your expert opinion, if I may, please.
Sure.
Ever grown a tomato?
I have some heirloom tomatoes in my greenhouse right this minute.
I'm being halfway serious here. From the seedling stage, when what do they call the little cotyledons or whatever, those first couple of little leaves that come up?
You have it correct. Very correct.
After that.
The first leaves, and then they have the first true leaves.
Right. After the first little baby leaves go away, is there any way that you could confuse a tomato plant with cannabis?
No. And
okay, just checking.
Wait a minute. If you could, you shouldn't be doing that job.
Well, I would think that. I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking about Texas, and I've got a pretty good working knowledge of what the productivity cycle is on a tomato plant.
Right.
You know, we get them in the ground. Generally, you know, there's a rule of thumb here in West Virginia that you never plant anything that can be killed by a frost until after Mother's Day. And nonetheless, the really hardcores, you know, they've got their tomatoes and all of their, you know, cucumbers and everything sprout. They'll have them sprouted because we'll have those freak warm spells sometimes in like late April, and they'll have these beautiful gardens. They'll all get killed off, and then they get to replant them again. But nobody who's got any experience around here plants until after Mother's Day, and we wound up having to not plant until June 1 here. So, like I said, just in the last couple of weeks, we started seeing fresh tomatoes here. So that's a good solid 2 months. And I'm trying to think of what maybe you get two growing seasons in Arlington, Texas, or maybe you can, you know, start some in March and then start some more in April and start more in. But wouldn't the little green globules or perhaps the red ones be kind of a tip off?
Any flowers, any fruit, any, just the texture of a tomato plant, I'm sure you've seen it, has little tiny hairs that stick out from the side of the stem.
Yeah.
And even if you touch, and that's why it's not good to even touch a tomato plant. Once you touch that, you kill some of those hairs and you leave it susceptible to fungus and bacteria and
blight. Yeah.
Right. You powdery mildews and, you know, and that's part of, you're not going to like this, but this is crazy. I have to actually have a greenhouse to be warmer for my tomatoes.
In Hawaii?
Yes, because I'm a little bit up the mountain. But
oh, okay. Yeah, sure. I mean, it snows at the top of. Yeah.
Well, not that. I'm only 1,000 feet. But the thing is, it's so rainy here, things would melt under that rain, a tomato anyway. It would just turn to black mold, botrytis, and just melt.
Oh, sure. And you know, the other thing, you know, you're not going to do any good with your tomatoes, I'm told, or I've always been told, until your consistent soil temperature reaches about 72 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right, and they actually do better at higher temperatures, like 80 and lower 90s. They are very tropical species, tomato. But and so out here, my daytime temperature is only about 78. So I kind of raise it sometimes.
Wow. And you know, the tomato, of course, like so many of the species that were geniusly brought along by the first peoples on this continent, are kin to the deadly nightshade family. They're a part of the deadly nightshade family.
Pepper family, eggplant, yeah.
Squash, potatoes.
Very good family, though. Very.
Oh, yeah.
Very tasty.
But you know that Thomas Jefferson had a hard time getting people to eat tomatoes, even in his day. Because they were convinced that they were a poison Indian food.
Not a surprise. Blame it on the other culture.
Sure, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, if you sit down and you eat raw green tomatoes, about 1,000 of them in a day, you will be deader than you'll be deader than Pharaoh's cat.
Right, and we don't really put an outlaw or a legality or anything like that on tomatoes, do we?
No.
So, kind of confusing there.
I can imagine, and
I get me and my wife go. She gets mad at me because I always say, what is their reasoning anymore? You know, is it moral? Is it ethical? Is it science? I don't think they have any of those three. So, what's the reasoning?
It's almost, yeah, because you get down to the point where you realize it's almost like the Christopher. Oh, what's his name? That played the nasty judge in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's just, you know, they don't want anybody to have fun, and they don't want anybody to be relaxed, or they don't want anybody to be comfortable, or whatever. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm sitting here, and I'm a little jealous, Kenny.
Sorry.
Living in paradise, you know. But it. I got a note just came in here from Jan and Jerry out in Nevada with the note, I can understand if they confuse the dope plants with geraniums, maybe?
Or hibiscus. I've got a edible species of hibiscus, or this Japanese maple species that I have.
Oh.
It looks identical.
Oh, the Japanese lace-leaf maple?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm well familiar. It's particularly delightfully suited to bonsai.
Right.
And
beautiful.
Way back in the 80s, there was, you know how the Ralph Lauren polo shirt and the Lacoste with the alligator and the polo pony and yada, yada, yada. Well, way back in the 80s, there was a brand of polo shirt that was really, really big with little preppy kids on college campuses because in place of the alligator or the polo pony, there was a little Japanese lace leaf maple leaf. And so if you were a preppy pothead kid in college, you made sure that, and you know, you paid a princely ransom for the damn things. But everybody said, oh, that's so cool. You got like a pot leaf shirt. And then you could say, no, it's a Japanese lace leaf maple leaf. Oh, God, the things that remain on my, the little neurons in my brain. But it's,
yeah.
I mean, I sincerely hope, and if it, God forbid it should happen, but if it happens, Kenny, it drop me a note. If they come in and rip up your tomato plants and leave your cannabis sitting there.
No, and see, that's another thing. Just the overall, I don't know what. I guess our Hawaiian cops go to sensitivity training or something. I mean, I am for real. Do you hear of any of the crazy shit that is going on the mainland? Coming from here, just the way the cops treat the people, I don't hear it over here.
No, I've got a story out of Talibandiana in the stack here, Kenny.
I mean, I think it's because the people, the cops live here with the people they're policing, and you've got this mentality on the mainland. You could have police that come from a whole different community policing this community that has nothing to do with them, so they don't care one crap about those people.
No. But like I said, I got a story out of Talibandiana here. A guy was riding his bicycle, and he happened to be a firefighter in that community, and he was even the youth minister at a church. And he's riding his bicycle, and one of the black and white rollers goes by, and he just waves at him. You know, hi, guys. You know, because he's a firefighter, right? He's on the same team, kind of. They turn around, come out, get him off his bike, knock him down to the ground, and put a taser 2 inches from his face, saying, why'd you raise your hands to us? I mean, there's a level of fascist paranoia in this country that it sounds like hasn't fully obtained yet in the islands. That's terrifying to behold. A story out of Houston, Texas. I think Harris County Sheriff's deputy, unnamed of course, just resigned after a woman complained that he responded to a complaint she made to the police department about harassing phone calls, not that she made, but that were made to her home. And he showed up, told her to go upstairs so they could talk in private, and raped her. And doesn't that...
And that really gives you a lot of trust for the police, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
Undermining them, they undermine themselves when they do shit like that. You know, it's... Just like there was also, I think that was Texas as well, where they pulled over two black females that were in bikinis because they had come from some summer festival or something. And then they pretty much strip searched them on the side of the highway, brought in a female. They at least brought in a female officer, but she, you know, did the whole strip search thing on the side of the highway in front of these other male cops. I think that one's actually they're getting some. They might be having some trouble over that one. So, but
and by the way, it goes without saying that the firefighter in question was dark skinned.
Oh, of course. I didn't even have to wonder.
No, you really don't, do you?
Are you familiar with Glenn Ford? Is it Glenn Ford? Black Agenda Radio?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, very, very good.
Oh, very.
You know, and I very much respect, and, you know, and also Gary Null. Have you ever heard of Gary Null?
I have.
Yeah, I think he really was into nutrition, but, God, he's getting into politics, you know, or talking about the politics a lot more. And unlike these, most of the crazies on the right that, you know, they say they're for, you know, they kind of act like they're progressive, they're actually libertarian because they always say they don't believe in climate change, you know. He believes in climate change and, you know, it's like, so, you know, but sometimes they'll have people on there that are on the line. And there's so many people right now are on the line that act like they're progressive, but they're actually libertarian, and they do not believe in climate change.
It is absolutely, I'm convinced, Kenny, it's a stealth movement.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, if you think back to Occupy, and we've had a number of conversations about this, while everybody else was sitting around going, whatever shall we do about Occupy, the libertarians were moving in and saying, well, you know, you've got a lot of good points. Here, let me tell you about Ron Paul.
And Alex Jones.
Oh, absolutely, Alex Jones. And we need gold coins.
Yeah. I mean, where did gold go, too? It dropped like $600 or so since they were all doing, you know, trying to bid it up.
No, I know. I just did some very cheap calculator math the other day trying to find out the richest man in ancient Rome. It gave the number of talents of gold he was worth, and then they found out how many ounces was in a talent, and holy cow. I mean, that man was richer than anybody on the face of the planet right now. And it was in gold. And oddly enough, for all these buy gold now types, you know how he died? His name is Marcus Licinius Crassus, Kenny. He died by having a Persian king have his retainers hold his mouth open while they poured liquid gold down his throat.
Down his throat, yes.
Cautionary tale at the very least, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I guess he couldn't get enough.
Well, good luck with both the tomatoes and your medical horticulture. You know, I hope the helicopters go away and stay away. And don't be such a stranger. Wonderful conversation.
Yeah, sorry. It's been, God, almost maybe two years or more since
I think it has, yeah.
Sorry. It's just,
well, I understand, and you know,
we've sent a pledge here and there, you know.
Yes, you have, and it has been much appreciated.
But we love hearing from you. You know, you're You're like our East Coast representative there that's actually got a fantasy. You know, all my family's from the East Coast, and like none of them can even contemplate. I don't know what's wrong with them. They're just so bombarded by all that damn propaganda over there, because they're like in Norfolk, Virginia. You know, and that's like...
Oh, yeah, Norfolk, Virginia, where the default position was that all rape victims were lying. That story made my eyeballs roll back in my head when I read it the other day.
Yeah. Well, I remember my quote that I told you before. I said I was, fleeing the religious right, pretty much. I was moving south and just farther south and to New Orleans, and that didn't get me away from them, because I found out that was just as bad. It was just, you know, cloaked in a different way. And then moved over here and finally got kind of away from all that religion shit.
the fundies are not beating down the doors in the islands.
No, we've first couple of years we were here, we had pamphlets left on our gate a couple times, and that's about it. And so we no pressure over here, you know. And
hang loose, right?
I can go to the beach and be nude. I love it, you know. Screw them.
Yeah, I guess we're gonna have to keep me away from Hawaii, because that the state would depopulate itself with, you know, just one good naked walk by Bob Kincaid down to the beach.
Just don't have a mirror anywhere near, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'd fry to a crisp. Yeah, I'd fry to a crisp, and there'd be nothing left but the flip flops within the first 15 seconds out the door. I am, after all, the whitest man north of Johnny and Edgar Winter.
We'll get you one of those solar cookers right next to you.
Hey, Kenny, you have yourself a good afternoon.
Hey, it was good talking to you, Bob.
Oh, it's a real joy. You take care.
Aloha.
Aloha, indeed. Kenny calling from Hawaii, and with confirmation of the stupidity of the DEA, or the Arlington, Texas Police Department. No, there is no possible way to confuse a tomato plant with cannabis. And this coming from a guy who understands. I mean, I can about this time of year, I start getting crazy for a fresh tomato. There's nothing better than taking a fresh tomato and just dipping it briefly in briskly boiling water. The skin comes right off. You salt it down real good. Eat it like an apple. Oh, yeah. I just sitting here thinking about Kenny in Paradise got me thinking about this old song that John Fox turned me on to a long time ago. Take a little break real quick. 304-658-3333 is the number. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype if you want to get in that way. Back in a sec.
Paradise.
I listened to that song, The Choir Boys, Run to Paradise, for the first time in a very long time, not too long back. Had a note. It was the night that was it Ron and Raleigh that sent in Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil, and I subsequently got an email. I got an internet from a listener with a long, wonderful list of great Australian rock and roll, and the Choir Boys are an Australian band. And Agnes always loved that song too. And aren't you glad I didn't choose Eddie Money singing Two Tickets to Paradise? I mean, really. Note in from Dr. John. What an awesome call. Thanks to Kenny for chiming in. Please keep in touch. Hawaii is like another country for all the news we get from y'all over here. And I suspect we should probably get more news. Maybe this country needs to be reminded from time to time that there are still happy places left in this country, although the right wing is dutifully trying to eliminate as many of them as it possibly can. And by the way, thanks. Thanks indeed to Sal and to Jugapunch, who took us all the way up to needing only $45 more to get all the way to the fundraising goal for tonight, you know, 150. So between Joan and Jugapunch and Sal and just one second here. I want to make sure I get all the names in. And I have to sort through the emails sometimes. One second. Oh, yeah, and Cindy. I'm sorry. Cindy and Joan and Sal and Jugapunch, thank you all very much for your help tonight. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's the pain in the ass again. Man, you got me going, though, with tomatoes.
Huh?
My house in Lake County, I could throw a rock into Lake Erie from my yard. And I was still picking, I'd be still picking tomatoes in November because of that.
Oh.
You had to start the garden a little later. My second wife was a gigantic pain in the whatever in many ways, especially toward the end. But she loved the garden, and man, that was a great place. In fact, I've got a question for anybody who knows anything about peaches. I hear there's a type of peach, what I've heard, that grows anywhere from Canada to Lake County and along Lake Erie. It's a certain type, and it really only grows in this area along the Great Lake area where something was left by the receding of the
by the retreat of the glaciers.
Yeah,
I was thinking the same thing. I don't necessarily know what kind of tomato. See what happens. I don't what kind of peach that would be, Bill. But
there was an old
I know. I bet I know where I could find it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this is another one of those unpaid solicitations. My favorite nursery.
Okay.
Is Miller Nurseries of Canandaigua, New York. And if it can grow in Canandaigua, it can grow anywhere.
Well, the idea, there was an old-timer in AA in Lake County, because the old lady was involved with AA, and so I'd go to meetings because, yeah, what the hell, you know, especially if they had a celebration of an anniversary, man. People would bring in food. Man, I'd show up and eat like a little hog, you know. But I wanted to get that out of the way. But what you were talking about tonight with medical, I could give you a half an hour dissertation on Medicaid health aides. Are you familiar with them?
Oh, yes.
And you know, some of these people set up these companies. They get an RN and somebody with money gets behind them. And they set up these companies and they hire these people for as little as they can give them. You know, I mean, this is part of this whole system right now. As cheap as they can. I mean, when I started working at age 16, you know, part-time and evenings and that, it was $1 an hour, you know. But you could buy a Ford for $2,200, $2,500, you know, brand new. and prices were, you know, but the pay, I guess auto workers might have been getting about a fin.
Well, when I started my first job as a pimply-faced little DJ at the gospel radio station, my minimum wage job got me $3.35 an hour.
Yeah, DJs were poorly paid.
But you know what? That $3.35 an hour then had more purchasing power than the minimum wage does now.
Yeah. Yeah, because whoever got me for my CD collection and a bunch of other stuff was a health aide. And she was really good until she needed money. And then, you know, they know where everything is in your place. And they know everything about you.
And you're visually impaired.
Oh, yeah. Well, they would find out if I got within the foot of their face. I could still coordinate a right hand, you know. I mean, it isn't that bad. It's still, it could be worse, in other words, you know.
Yeah.
It hurts your reading ability. In fact, one of our friends sent a copy of the Thomas thing to me, but my reader won't handle it. Some of these readers are... That's why I'd love to sit and talk to our friend from Colorado, because I think he's in worse shape than me in a lot of ways with the visual. But that's every time we, and you're going to see all kind of crap growing out of the president's health care plan. And I think my problem with that health care plan of his, too many of the insurance companies were in on the bargain.
Well, they weren't just in on it. They drove the bargain.
Yeah.
And that's the one part of this that convinces me even further, Bill, that the real important part of it is the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
Because if we could maintain the Senate and someday take back the House, then, you know, you go in and you say, nah, 137% is too low. Let's make it 175% of the poverty line. And then listen to the insurance companies squeal.
Well, when I talked to people in England, went on national health care after World War II because the damn country was so busted. Or I was in Canada, and I had a guy down here pull a wrong tooth, and I go to Canada for 2 weeks of vacation, and my last night there, I'm in agony from this infected tooth that came back. Because, you know, once the penicillin, so many days of penicillin, it goes away, but it'll be right back if it's... And when I walked in his office, he said, "You owe me money." I said, "I ought to shoot your ass." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, if it was the Old West and you pulled the wrong tooth, the guy would be back in your office pushing a .44 down your throat." You know, you've seen enough Western movies.
Sure.
Because you know? I'm being facetious, but although I was... I mean, I spent the last night in Canada. I had to go to a local little hospital, and they gave me penicillin and some... And I drove the next... from near Peterborough, Ontario, back to Niagara Falls, Canada. It was about a 6 to 7 hour ride, and I'm sucking ice cubes all the way back.
Oh.
Toothache. Yeah, I've been through it with, you know, you look at your parents and you'll inherit it. Oh, and the other type of, you guys were talking bacon? Hey, the West Virginia Kentucky National Breakfast is one of my favorites.
What?
You don't know what that is?
How can I? No. How did I miss this?
Well, you take some sausage, and you make a white base, and...
Oh, like a white gravy base?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a white roux?
And you pour it over biscuits.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hell yeah.
We have a restaurant here named after a sausage company, and the only reason I'd ever go there was if I had a taste for that. Because it might not have been the greatest, but it was edible. But I had a buddy two houses away when I lived in downtown Cleveland. He was a Kentucky. He's the guy that taught me how to catch bass, among other things. And his mother, on a Sunday, she sent him over with some of this sausage biscuits and gravy. If the woman wasn't 80, I'd have married her. I mean, it was...
Oh, no, that stuff has magical properties. It does.
And, well, I know it doesn't do... It kind of... It'll clog up your arteries.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's... You know, I don't know if it clogs the arteries or if we let it, because...
We don't exercise enough.
Right. I've mentioned before, Bill, I can go 3 miles out the road here and go to my ancient ancestors' cemeteries, and they're all dying at 90, 95 years old 150 years ago.
Yeah.
And they work like dogs. And they ate, you know, they ate gravy with gravy on it.
See, I'm with another thing. I'm with the social service agency that provides rides to medical. And it used to be you called them up, and you talked to your worker, and you told them the doctor's name, and they had it on file. These are the same doctors consistently, you know. I don't get a new doctor every time I need to go to the MD or whatever, the eye doctor or whoever. And now they want you to call in a recording and give them the name, the address, the time. And here I am with bad vision. And I call the caseworker and say, hey, you know I'm legally blind, for Christ's sake. Well, have your health aide do it for you. Well, health aid, they're not supposed to do this kind of stuff. They're supposed to come in and clean and do a little straightening, and some of them do...
Steal your CDs and... Right.
You know, and whatever, you know. And I have a really good one now, because she's an unusual one. She's a Shaker Heights kid. Grew up in Shaker, graduated with a lot of musicians, I know, because she's in her early 60s, which, you know, I just turned 70 in January. It, you know, being the first baby...
January 1st, yes, I was about to...
But, yeah, I would just, I mean, this, if people, I'll just send out a warning if people don't know. When you have to get some of these health aids, look out for your old folks.
Yeah.
Because you get the wrong one, they got, you know, this one pulled a stunt on me. She took me down to her car and said, oh, I forgot something. And, let me have your keys. And I was stupid because I'd worked with this woman for 2 years. I trusted her. She would call me at home on Sunday morning and bitch about her boyfriend. What should I do, Bill? You've been around a lot. What should I do with this guy? And I said, well, if I were you, I'd shoot him. You know, I mean, you got you don't know what to say to people. Well, I'm a blues singer, so what the hell do you do if you're a blues singer?
Well, shoot him. If they're too big to whoop, you shoot him or cut him. Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the old tradition of...
Or there's the Robert Johnson approach, you know, a little poison.
Yeah, that's what they did to him, yeah. Somebody did.
God, I can't believe it, yeah.
Well, country singers can enter into, years ago, would enter into some of that kind of talk, too. Frankie and Johnny, and that was covered by people. You know who I never talk about, but who I love, is the singing brakeman, the yodeling Jimmy Rogers.
Yeah, yeah.
God, was he something. And the funny thing about Jimmy Rogers, Muddy Waters had a guitar player who recorded on Chess. His name was Jimmy Rogers.
And you're too far north to get the evening skywave signal off of Nashville's AM 650 WSM, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's tough.
I have a good radio. I have one of those silly-ass radios they were selling out of the West Coast. C. Crane was selling them. It's so damn heavy because of the coil antenna in it. But how do you think I fell into blues in 56?
Sure.
I was dialing around and I got WLAC.
Yeah.
And they had 2 3-hour blocks of blues sponsored by two different mail order record companies.
It would be worth your effort if you can do it, just to try to dial in AM 650 some evening. Because there's nothing like, anytime I get within, especially after dark, get in range of the skywave for on AM, that's the first place I go. Because I mean that's you know, I love what Charlie Pierce says, that most modern country acts sound like they're auditioning for the touring tribute band for Night Ranger.
Yeah.
But you know, those guys have a history, and it's really neat because the city of Nashville absolutely demands that station be what that station is, and you know, dial it in and bang, there you are. I mean, you know, Hank Snow,
the old timers.
Yeah, I mean, real, you know, the real stuff.
Who did I'm Moving On? I Warned You, Baby, from time to time. Was it Hank Snow? Or was it? I forget who it was because Ray Charles covered it. And I heard Charles' version. I used to do that.
Hank Snow.
Okay. Because to me, that's, man, there ain't much difference between that and a good blues. I mean,
there's a line from a Jimmy Buffett song that I love called The Wino and I Know.
Ha!
One of the lines in that song is, the ice cream man is a hillbilly fan, sing 78s by Hank Snow. And you know, that was one of those little moments when I was a much younger person. Hank Snow, and go running off and damn.
Well, Red Foley did a thing that caught my ear. When I grew up and I understood the lyrics better, the Chattanooga Shoeshine Man, as we would call him today, they used the term boy.
Yeah.
Well, he could have been. I mean, how many young kids did I know, including me?
Boss Man Wayne, who is the head of this operation.
Yep.
Boss Man Wayne grew up in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, shining the shoes of a young hotshot athlete by the name of Mike Ditka.
Oh, Jesus.
Randy just let me know, and this will be good news for you. Randy and PA just let me know that if you go to WSM online, yeah, you can stream it in.
Okay, WSM, I'll give it a shot. I have a friend who is good at doing that for me. He's given me some good music, including.
You can if they're playing what they're playing, man, just set it and let it go.
Because people say, "Well, you're a blues man. Well, how come you listen to country?" I said, "The."
Because they come from the same sort of intellectual, spiritual space.
Yep, exactly. That was what the old timers were, and I said, if Ray Charles can pick up a Hank Snow song, so can I. I mean, it's blues singer can do
it.
Yeah,
blues has a piano. Old time country has lap steel.
Even some of the pop guys, Floyd Kramer, I love the sound of his piano.
Oh.
He had a real sound.
I talk about how I try to expose Ferg to different kinds of music and everything.
Well, there's American music.
You should have heard him, seen the look on his face the night that I played Jim Reeves for him for the first time.
Oh, yeah, Reeves was there.
And he heard that beautiful baritone bass.
Yeah, he had it.
Hey, Bill, I got to get out of here. We're less than a minute away.
But anyhow, one of these days I'll get back on and we'll talk about this health care situation.
Let's do.
AIDS and get people warned to be careful.
Indeed, indeed. Bill, have yourself a great night. All right.
Good night tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now. Mr. Stress, our buddy Bill, calling from Cleveland. Time to get out of here. One last thing. Randy in PA also pointed out, he said, the only negative thing I ever heard about cannabis was that it left a waxy substance in the brain, and my only response to that is to say that's because it melts in your brain, not in your hand. Couldn't resist. Y'all have a great night. Thanks for everything. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, and Rick Smith on the way right now.